Shoot the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're
out here. I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you've played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to a special edition of Shoot the Defense. I'm your host, Stel, and this is my top five matches. My co-host on this edition is none other than Mr. Mike Pieri. Good evening, sir. How is one?
I'm good, Stel. Thank you. You?
Yeah, all good, mate. We just watched the United. We won't talk about that because it will just depress everyone.
It will. The show is going to be far, far more entertaining, far more exciting. We're going to talk about far better football than what we watched in the last, Oh, God, it went into extra time, didn't it? Good grief.
Yeah, there you go. That's an hour and a half of our lives we won't get back. But hey, what can you do? But hey, right, so do you want to introduce our special guest since you know him very, very well?
Yes, I will. Delighted to have on the show Premier League footballer, Wales full international. Seen him live a couple of times, seen him grow up as well. It's none other than Bournemouth and Wales international Chris Meppham. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. All good. How are you guys?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, for us, I guess lockdown's pretty much the same, but for footballers, you've been afforded a little bit more freedom. And how's it been since you've come back? Or, you know, the lockdown's been eased for you guys. How's it been, Chris?
Yeah, it hasn't been too bad, to be fair. It's very different to what any of us, I mean, anyone in the up and down the country have been used to. Sort of didn't know when we were sort of going back. It's difficult when you're off to sort of plan ahead, and we're sort of getting sent weekly schedules, which have changed quite a lot, obviously, with the guidelines. So I think it was just a case of sort of keeping yourself ticking over during that period, just making sure you stay fit, stay in shape, stay injury free. And that was why it was good for me, because it gave me a little bit more time to recover from my long-term injury and to my knee, which I sort of suffered before the lockdown. So yeah, it sort of gave me a bit of time to sort of strengthen that area up. And yeah, now we're back in that full-time environment now.
Excellent. Stel, do you want to crack on, absolutely.
So, Chris, your first game, we'll talk about this one at great length if you like, because it was an FA Cup victory for Brentford against Eastleigh. It was a 5-1 victory. I believe you came on with 10 minutes to go. Now, players like Josh McEachran were there, Nico Yanaris, who was at Arsenal. Did you start your playing career at Chelsea in their youth academy? Is that right?
Yeah, I was there from under 8 to under 14s, under 15s. So I was in sort of like Tammy Abraham, Shikai Tomori, Dominic Solanke, all that age group. So it was like a strong team, and I had two very good centre-halves ahead of me at the time. Shikai Tomori, obviously, he was now in Chelsea first team, and then Jay Clark also, who I believe is at Birmingham on loan from Chelsea. So yeah, it was tough. I had a lot of them. Good competition ahead of me, and yeah, they sort of released me under 14, so that was the end of the journey at Chelsea.
I get the feeling you had a rough idea that you were going to come on at some point. Were you given any instructions, any basic instructions by the manager, or just some motivational technique, so to speak?
Yeah, I think obviously with the scoreline, it was a good scoreline for me to come on. I think sometimes in them games, if they're a lot tighter, then it's a little bit sort of risky giving someone their debut, but luckily sort of we went 4 goals up. I think it was up 5-1 at the time I came on. I think obviously as a manager, bringing a young lad on, making his debut, you feel sort of more than comfortable. And I think obviously coming on, you do feel a lot less pressure than you probably would do coming on if it's a draw or if you're sort of trying to hold on to a lead. So he just sort of said, go out, enjoy the moment, it'll be one of the best moments of your life. and yeah, hopefully first of many. Yeah, albeit sort of 10 minutes, it was still an unbelievable moment, which I'd always sort of remember.
Mm. And did it mean it, a lot to the fans and the players, given that Martin Allen was the head coach of the other side?
Yeah, to be honest, like, my dad obviously sort of told me in the build-up to the game that he used to be manager down at Brentford, and I've heard him on Talk Sport a couple of times where they've sort of, I think he was saying that he's had sort of like heart problems and he got advice to sort of stay against managing, and you can see him on the touchline and there's no surprise why he's got heart problems, because he's very, very passionate, and you can tell what he's like as manager, very like I said very passionate about his players, about the team, and yeah, he's obviously very well known with Brentford fans, so he got a really good reception down there, I remember.
Fantastic. So in terms of the match itself, what were your most memorable moments?
I think I just wanted to, I remember sort of coming on last 10 minutes, we were very comfortable and in possession, we had a lot of the ball, and easily, as you can imagine, was sort of tiring, obviously not having the fitness levels that Championship players are used to, and obviously with a step up in quality. So I think when I came on, Brentford very much in control of the game, and as you can imagine, not 5-1, so I just sort of wanted to come on, just keep it simple, just keep moving the ball, and try and be confident when I do have it, and yeah, that's what I sort of tried to have in my head, just sort of preparing myself for that environment, sort of getting used to the crowds and stuff, which I've never really sort of been used to before that. So yeah, there was a lot to take in a short space of time.
Chris, so you come on, play the game, you said it's comfortable, final whistle goes, how do you feel? You've made your professional debut, how do you feel? What's the feelings? Were you looking at anyone in the crowd? Were you still on the, you know, did you take time to come off the pitch? Did other players come up to you? What was the whole experience after the final whistle?
Yeah, I could definitely hear my mum in the crowd screaming and shouting as she always was. To be fair, my parents have been like unbelievable with me from like a young age, in terms of like sort of driving me all up and down the country for football, and when I sort of found it really difficult after getting released by Chelsea, they were the ones that stuck by me and sort of motivated me to carry on trying, and ultimately it was my mum that pushed me to go ahead with that trial at Brentford, because I was quite reluctant to go after the setbacks that I suffered previously, and it was my mum that said, look, if you don't want to do it for yourself, like, do it for me, because as your mum, I wouldn't be able to live myself if I didn't push you and sort of encourage you to go ahead with it. So I've got a lot to thank them both for, and yeah, they hardly missed the game, so I think they would have definitely been delighted with me. And yeah, as you can imagine, sort of players coming up to you after the game, saying well done, giving you sort of encouraging words, and it's always a nice moment to get your match shirt signed by all the players with sort of nice messages, which I've still got framed for now. That's my first sort of professional moment in the game, so yeah, it was a massive one for me.
And what about, how was training the week after for the rest of the week? How was that? Were you still buzzing, or was it just, do you know what, head on, focus on and keep working hard, or were you just still a bit on cloud nine?
Do you know what, it was really weird. So following week, I went in, so I think that game would have been on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. Monday morning, go in, sort of expecting training on a Thursday, and I was back with the under-21s. So that was that. I'm not sure the reason behind it. I mean, I know some managers do it so you don't sort of get ahead of yourself, yeah, and sort of keep you down to earth, keep you grounded and stuff. But I just remember, like, coming back to my dad that evening saying, Dad, not being funny, like, I just made my debut for the first team. And then 2 days after, I'm sort of training with that with the 21s. And he said, look, like, you don't know the reason behind it. Like, just keep showing good attitude. And I think after a couple of days, I started sort of going back in. So I think from the club's point of view, they wanted to sort of give lads a taste of the action, but not sort of push them up too soon, where they sort of start to get comfortable and stuff. I think they very much wanted to keep my head down, keep myself sort of motivated and working hard to get to that level on a more often basis.
Hmm. Just last question about the game and Brentford. I mean, Brentford always have been known to play really good football. Is that the style of football throughout the club? So you said you went back to the under-21s. Is that how the whole club plays?
Definitely, yeah. Brentford have always had a very sort of clear philosophy from, like you said, the the first team downwards, so through sort of the 21s at the time, the youth team at the time, under 16s, 15s, it was very much whatever the first team done, we were sort of trying to replicate, which I think is good because that way you learn the way the first team plays, and if you are called upon, it's not alien to you. You're used to sort of training that way, used to the positions you take on the pitch, the formation that the first team plays. So, yeah, there was very much clear method sort of come down the academy, and even with the sort of like youth team and under 21 games, it was very much focused on the performances rather than the results, which you hear a lot of people say, but at Brentford it very much was that case. It was very much sort of like just focus on your own performance, trying to implement the way that the first team plays, make your mistakes early so that when you get into the first team you're as prepared as possible and hopefully you don't make them sort of mistakes on the big stage. So yeah, it was very much sort of building up from the back, expansive football, good in possession, which sort of suited me as I like to think of myself as a ball playing centre back who likes to get on the ball and dictate play and stuff. So I think I felt very comfortable in that system.
Excellent, because you played in central midfield at school, didn't you?
Yeah. not very well, but yeah.
Well, you're my captain.
I know. There's no one else to give it to, no one else to talk. Just me running my mouth all the time.
No, you were great. Still?
If I said to you Valencia Academy, and I know a friend of ours, Simon Osborne, is there, and they focus very heavily on football down in South London. Dean Austin is also there, Bobby Barry as well. Why do you think that part of the UK is such a hotbed of football talent?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you said it, knowing that I'm actually with Valenti.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they look after me, so Bob I know very well. Mike Drew, who's in charge of the agency, I've known them. They actually took me on when I was sort of on the bench in the under-16 team, but at Brentford, so they sort of came down to a game against Cardiff, and they sort of first spotted me there, and I've never heard of an agent before, never knew really what they'd done, and they took a chance on me, and I've been with them ever since. So I know Bob very well, and I know he's very passionate about developing younger players, and I know he's obviously based in South London, but yeah, I think across all London, I mean, you go to sort of local parks and football centres, and you see how many lads are doing it. I mean, in my school, mine and Mike's school, Queensmead, there was goals at lunchtime and goals after school and sort of five-a-side, and it was very popular with lads like myself that wanted to go for a kickabout. And I think to a lot of people, it is more than just a kickabout. A lot of lads really do take it seriously, and they use it as a way of getting noticed and improving on areas that they might want to improve in. So I think, yeah, you look at across London, I think you've got a real sort of hunger from young lads to want to be footballers, and it's very encouraging. And yeah, luckily I was sort of one of them that wanted to always improve and would go down goals at lunchtime and after school and go for a kick about my mates and stuff. And I think ultimately that's where it starts for a lot of younger lads.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I mentioned Valencia because I know Simon Osborne quite well. I've known him for a few years, to be fair. He's been on the show. So, yeah, he's told me a lot about the academy. I've been following him on Instagram for a while. And again, they've got that relationship with Crystal Palace, but also other sides as well. And you can tell that the players that have come through the ranks there, it's been absolutely unbelievable. I think there's a lad at Colchester that's very highly rated.
Well, I mean, Poku.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. Yeah,
yes, and he, funnily enough, he was on trial at Brentford when I was in the B team.
Oh, wow.
So my agent told me to work for Valenti. He sort of rang me and said, oh, there's a lad from Valenti Academy that's coming on trial at Brentford. Like, sort of let me know what he's like, make sure you sort of take him under your wing, look after him. So I remember he sort of came on trial, and my agent rang me that afternoon and said, how did he get on, sort of thing? And I said, look, I'd be very surprised if Brentford didn't take him. I think at the time he was like a lot younger than the lads in our age group, and obviously coming on trial was always difficult. You're a bit nervous, you don't really know the team and stuff. And he came in and he was really good. Unfortunately, Brentford didn't take a hit on him, and I hear sort of a couple of seasons later, he's sort of in Colchester first team. And I've seen him recently in the playoff games, and he looks really bright. So, yeah, there's an example of someone that's obviously come through that Valencia Academy, and it must be unbelievable for Bobby Bowery to sort of see lads like that. It must be really good for people like Kwame himself.
Okay, next game. Let's go with Bournemouth victory at Stamford Bridge. Wow, that was a bit of a shock, wasn't it? Blimey. It was quite a depleted squad at the time, wasn't it? I think he had injuries left, right and centre. But, you know, again, Eddie Howe worked his magic, and it was a Dan Gosling goal.
Yeah, do you know what? I remember that game. Probably.
I hope so.
Yeah, you like to think so. But no, that was a really special game, hence why it's in my top five. Obviously, being at Chelsea as a young lad, sort of coming up against lads that I played with, played against throughout the younger age groups. Obviously, Tammy Abraham was in my age group, so I sort of knew before the game, when I got told I was starting, that it's more than likely that it'll be Tammy that I'll be marking. So I think, yeah, for myself, it was a nice little personal challenge to come up against someone that I've known for a long time and sort of like mates with. And yeah, we started off the game really well, like very defensive. That was sort of the game plan going into it. You know that Chelsea would have a lot of the ball and look to sort of control possession. So we very much sort of stayed compact, made it hard for them to sort of create chances and break us through. And the game plan was sort of hold on and see if we could get a chance up the other end. And yeah, we left it quite late. It was very, very controversial at the time. Sort of didn't know whether it went over the line or not. But obviously triggered off when the referees watched it. It went over the line, but then there was the question of offside. Was Dan Gosling offside when the ball got headed back over? Yeah, and then obviously to come away on the back of quite a tough run, like you said, with the injuries that we had, to get a 1-0 away win at Stamford Bridge was, yeah, unbelievable. And my girlfriend was at the game, my mum and dad were there, so I remember we went out for a nice meal after in Notting Hill Gate, and yeah, it was really nice. Again, really special moment for me.
Was it extra special because it was against Chelsea and the way that things panned out for you at the club when you were a youngster?
I think so. I think there's always going to be that bit inside of you that wants to sort of prove people wrong. Obviously, I remember probably 6-7 years previously, I sort of got brought in a meeting and got told that I weren't good enough, and there was obviously lads ahead of me. Yeah, and I think Chelsea were very good by me. I loved my sort of 6 years there. It was very much a big part of my life for a long time, and it was a big commitment to sort of go to Cobham every couple of days to train and to play. But yeah, I think there's always that bit inside of you where if you got told you're not good enough by someone, you'd want to go out and prove that person wrong or that team wrong. And I very much had that in the back of my head. I think there was obviously that. Then there was sort of coming up against Tammy, a nice little individual battle throughout the game. But yeah, I think in any game I go into, I'd always give my 100% and try and do my best for the team. And yeah, I had a really good game that game, and defensively we were very solid throughout.
Chris, obviously in the lead up to games you'll have your tactics sessions and you'll have your individual priorities and you'll have your defensive work, midfield work and so on and so on, and it may be because you're still a young player so you're coming up against some players for the first time. Did this game make it easier for you because you grew up playing you know with and against Tammy Abraham? Were you surprised by anything that he, you know, he did against you, or was it I've seen that before many times on the training pitch?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time since I sort of last trained or played against him. When I joined Brentford and the B team got set up, we had quite a lot of friendlies against Chelsea, and it was against Chelsea when a lot of their lads that needed game time. So a lot of sort of their fringe players, lads have been out on loan that haven't sort of come back and been in and around it. So Tammy at that time was one of the players that was playing in them types of games. So it was probably only couple of seasons previous that I last played against him. And I'm a bit like you, sort of do your analysis before the game on them sort of players, and when you watch match of day you see what type of player he is. You know he's going to be quite big, physical, always likes to get on the end of things, sort of using his body. He's a big tall lad, so you sort of you have in your head how you're going to sort of mark him. to try and sort of turn his strengths into weaknesses as such. But I think on the day, it's always difficult. You can do all the research you want on the player, and if on that day they turn it on, then there's sometimes very little you can do. Yeah, I think that game was an example of a very sort of disciplined Bournemouth team against the Chelsea team that sort of lacks a bit of creativity. I remember that, like I said, they had a lot of the ball, I think probably 65, probably 70, towards the end of the game, 70% possession, but they didn't actually create a lot. So yeah, I think we handled him very well, but previously to that he was on a really good sort of goal scoring record. I think he sort of scored equal goals to games in the build up, so I think he might have had like 8 goals in 8 games. So he was in sort of very good run of form, and yeah, we definitely
And you stopped him.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, there's been games this year where the manager's pulled me and showed me sort of clips of Sergio Aguero in the build-up to the Man City game, and clips of Bobby Firmino for Liverpool in the build-up to that game, and on the day they were both very, very good. So I think, yeah, like I said, you can do all your homework that you want, but I think sometimes players like that that are really are world-class players, I think they're always going to get the better of you on some occasions. Ultimately, it's just trying to sort of do your best against them.
Excellent.
Chris, you saw Hudson-Odoi and Pulisic right before your eyes. What do you make of these two footballers? Because they've got such a bright future. And we saw Pulisic's goal the other day against Man City. You can see why he's highly rated, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think he had a bit of an injury when he first joined, and he's sort of been on the bench, sort of coming off. And I think sort of, in my case, sort of adapting to the Premier League, it is a big jump. Obviously, with him, he's coming from a new league, new country, sort of settling in. So it's always going to be difficult, but it looks like he's sort of found his form a little bit recently. Starting to make quite a big impact there. And I watched him the other night against Man City, and he looked very sharp from the start up against Kyle Walker, who's obviously a very tough defender to come up against, very athletic, very quick. Obviously, that's sort of Pulisic's attributes, very quick, agile. So it was interesting to see how he'd do against Kyle Walker, and I think on a lot of occasions he sort of got the better of him. And I think he's a player that at his age will only grow, and I'm sure the same with Callum Hudson-Odoi, as long as they sort of keep their minds where it should be and keep focused. Obviously, they're both probably on very good contracts, so I think that can sometimes sort of lead to a player being a bit sort of comfortable in their position and not sort of motivated. So I think as long as they both stay focused and motivated, then I'm sure they'll be very good players in the future.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Okay, shall we go with your debut for the Welsh national team? How about that?
Yeah, that was a good one.
There you go. Mexico. Pardon?
I said better than my Norwich one.
true, very true. Okay, well, first of all, how did you find out that you were called up to the national team? Did Mr. Giggs send you a text message? Did you give a phone call, email, or anything like that? WhatsApp?
It was quite a nice feeling with Giggs, actually. So he got appointed the job, and he got given the Wales national team job, which a lot of people thought he would do. And it was weird. Within the first week of him getting the job, I actually got a phone call from him, which was quite weird. You think, obviously, you'd have a lot going on, a lot of people to speak to, a lot of meetings, conferences. And I was playing at Brentford at the time, sort of just breaking into the first team. Probably had a run of sort of 7-8 games. And at that moment, there was slight interest from England of the 21s at the time, who sort of spoke to my agent and got in touch with the club and stuff, and basically sort of wondered if I'd want to sort of meet up with the England sort of 21s team. And I think at that point, I'd already represented Wales at under 20s, under 21 level, so already sort of had a loyalty to Wales. And for me, as soon as I played for Wales, I was never going to go back. So there was sort of interest there, and I think, like I said, within a week of Giggs getting the job, I get a phone call from him saying that he'd want to meet me and my agent, sort of local to the training ground, if there's sort of a hotel nearby, because he just sort of wanted to talk to me about his views on me in the future and where he thinks I'm at in my career and stuff. And so yeah, there was the Novotel Hotel, which is sort of 5 minutes away from the stadium, so me and my agent met him, and I had a long chat with him, and he sort of made it clear that he wanted to sort of give me my first call up for Wales. He sort of wanted me to commit fully, because obviously once you've represented the national team at competitive level, then there's sort of no going back at all. So I think he very much wanted to give me my sort of first start, sort of give me my first sort of cap for Wales. And I think there was a camp coming up quite soon. The first camp was the China Cup.
Mm.
My first camp that I got called up for, which was, again, unbelievable. There was sort of talks when I was sort of breaking in the first team that it might be soon when I get a call up for Wales, and luckily it did happen. I got named in the 23-man squad to go out to China, and yeah, made my debut against China in the China Cup. I think we're winning 6-0. Gareth Bale scored a hat-trick, standard. And then I think a couple of months after, I made my first start for Wales. So in that China game, I came on the sub. But a couple of months later, we had I think it was in the summer actually, we had a friendly against Mexico in the Rose Bowl Stadium in Los Angeles, which was unbelievable. It was a preparation game for Mexico's World Cup campaign, which was just about to start that summer. So they sort of wanted to have a friendly with a good country, sort of prepare themselves for the World Cup, and they agreed it with Wales. And yeah, it was at the Rose Bowl Stadium, so there was, I think, 83,000 people.
Yep.
Obviously, making your first start, it's a massive, massive arena to do it in. And yeah, it was unbelievable. It was me and Ashley Williams that started together. He had quite a bad rib injury that game, so he came off after sort of 20 minutes. But the final result was 0-0, so a clean sheet on your full sort of debut for Wales was, again, an unbelievable moment, sort of going into the summer, where you could sort of rest and sort of look back on what was an unbelievable season for me, and that game sort of topped out all off.
Mm. Well, you mentioned it was, 83,000. Now, predominantly it was made up of Mexican supporters, because obviously that part of the world is a big Hispanic contingent. So what was the atmosphere like? Because even though it's a friendly game, for these people, there's no such thing as a friendly for the Central Americans.
No. And you could sense that as soon as you got to the stadium. I mean, sort of being on the coach, arriving at the stadium, it was like there was fans chanting everywhere.
Mm.
As soon as you step in, sort of walk out onto the pitch, and before the warm-up, when you're sort of looking around and getting a feel for the surface and stuff, the stadium was just filling up so quick, and they're very, very passionate supporters. And obviously with their World Cup campaign sort of coming up, it was, I think it was their last sort of preparation game before the actual campaign started. So it was a massive game for them and for their fans, who are, like I said, very passionate. It was very much sort of walking into the unknown to me, because I've never sort of played in front of anywhere near that amount of people in my life.
Mm. And one more question from me, mate. Do you know that was the stadium that Baresi missed the penalty in 94?
No, I didn't know that.
There you go. And do you know who else missed the penalty in that tournament?
Yeah, my dad probably would have told me it. My dad's always sort of hit me with facts about stadiums that I'm playing at, so I'm sure it was a bit before my time, I think.
Well, Baresi missed the penalty in the final, as did Roberto Baggio, but more importantly, Dinah Ross missed the penalty in that tournament as well, didn't she, Mike?
Yeah, the opening ceremony.
There you go. Go on, Mike, your question, mate. I'm boring people with my trivia.
So, Chris, you said that 20 minutes in, Ashley Williams, you're playing next to him, experienced player, actually captain of the team. He comes off with a rib injury, you say, and is replaced by Tom Lockyer. Now, between you, you only had about 5 caps. So who took how did that feel? Who took seniority in terms of holding the back four and, pushing up, pushing back? How did that work? Because I assume that Ashley Williams was the one who's going to guide you through the game and take you through the game during your first first full debut.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was why that game was so big for me, because, like you said, you've got your leader starting and you can sort of have him organising the back four line and sort of squeezing you up, telling you to drop and stuff. And suddenly when you take someone like that off the pitch with his experience and his communication, knowledge of the game, it's really difficult. Like you said, when you're sort of replacing him with someone that has hardly played for Wales, although very experienced at club level, like Tom Loughlier is, he's played a lot of games for his age, but in terms of Wales games, hadn't really played many. So it's difficult, but I think I started the game really well, and I think he sort of came on 25 minutes in, so I sort of went past that initial sort of like nervous sort of first 5 minutes where he's sort of grown into the game. And I think I felt very settled when Tom Loughlier came on. I think it was very much a case of, although we're two sort of inexperienced lads at international level, we're sort of like, there you are, go and show what you're capable of. And yeah, it was marking Javier Hernandez, of not sure where he was at the time, obviously previously at United, Real Madrid, so we had a tricky customer that we was marking. But yeah, we marked him really well, and like I said, having a clean sheet was amazing, and that's probably one of the best games I've had. I remember sort of coming off the pitch afterwards, and Giggs and Albert Seidenberg, who's now Arsenal's number two, with Mikel Arteta, both sort of really congratulated me and spoke very highly of me after the game, which was nice. Like I said, it was sort of the last game before our summer holiday, which you can imagine sort of going into the summer holiday having just played that game was unbelievable.
Amazing. So it was your full debut. Did you keep your shirt or did you swap it with one of the Mexican players?
I think I kept mine because I wanted to get it framed. My mum's always sort of nagging me to keep that shirt so she can give to friends and family. So although I wanted to swap it, I think it was more important for me to keep my own one, seeing as that was my first start for Wales.
Brilliant, brilliant. What's the next game still?
Right, let's go with the 1-1 draw between Bournemouth and Sheffield United. You scored on the hour mark. Billy Sharp then equalised with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah. A little fact about that, both my career goals have actually been against Sheffield United in draws, which is my track record against them. So yeah, my first career goal was for Brentford, left foot swinger. Don't know how I went into this, but yeah, that was against Sheffield United at home in a 1-1 draw. And then yeah, following season, I got my move, like first game of this season it was, gave us the lead with, I think, on like 60th minute, so that was a massive moment for me. Obviously, first game of the season in front of a lively crowd with where you sort of want to get off to a good start, and for the new campaign was amazing. And yeah, unfortunately it couldn't be the winner because Billy Sharp popped up with a last minute goal, but yeah, nonetheless still very, very important moment for me. First sort of Premier League goal, which again you'd always remember. Like I said, it was disappointing that it wasn't the winner, because it would have been unbelievable if we would have got 3 points. And yeah, it got us off to a very good start to the season.
Fantastic.
Third youngest Premier League scorer for Bournemouth. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did know that actually. I saw it on Twitter a couple of weeks ago.
How brilliant.
Who is this? Harry Wilson, Brooksy, and me, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think so, yeah.
Good stuff.
Two good lads in front of me, so I'll take that massively.
So, what was the game plan that day? Because we know that Eddie Howe likes to play some expansive football, whereas, you know, Chris Wilder, very compact, but they play down the flanks. Did you guys envisage them stretching the game?
Yeah, we did, to be fair. We matched them up formation-wise. So, obviously, a typical Eddie Howe team normally plays 4-4-2, more recently 4-3-3. But that game, we decided to sort of match them up formation-wise, just to stop their sort of overlapping centre-halves, normally overlapping full-backs, but in their case, it's Chris Basham and Jack O'Connell bombing on, and yeah, the full-backs bombing on. So I think we wanted to sort of match them up to try and sort of counteract their strengths as a team. And see, I was playing right side of the three, which is, it's quite new to me. I've always sort of played in the back four, so that was quite different. playing right side of the three, sort of find yourself receiving the ball a lot wider, sort of in full-back positions, which is quite sort of different from what you do. Since centre-half, you're normally quite used sort of receiving it quite centrally and sort of playing wide. But yeah, that game, it was quite a game of few chances, to be honest. It wasn't the most exciting of games, but sort of getting a 1-0 lead after 60 minutes is sort of the game plan well worked. And like I said, it's disappointing that we didn't hold on to it, because it's the first game of the season. It's always good to get momentum in it. You sort of look at Sheffield United's season so far and sort of look back at that last minute winner, and you think if they wouldn't have got that last minute sort of equaliser, and you think if they would have lost that first game, would momentum have been different for them? You never know. Yeah, like I said, it was still a very, very special moment for me. And yeah, hopefully first of many Premier League goals. I haven't managed to get another one, but hopefully that will come.
Great stuff. Mike?
Chris, as a defender, obviously your job is to stop goals, and you scored the opener. How gutted were you that you conceded so late, the fact that you are a defender and, you know, 3 points turned into one in the end?
Yes, it was heartbreaking. I mean, like I said, first game of the season, it's always, I think the manager put a lot of emphasis on getting the win, just getting that first win in the bag. And then our second game of the season was away to Villa, where we got 3 points as well, so... Yeah, it would have been 6 points in six from the first two games, which would have put us right up there at the top of the table. And you sort of look back in the position where we're in now, and you think games like that are ones where you sort of look back and think, oh, should have got more from that game. I know every team sort of will look back at games in the season where they felt like they could have got a lot more. Yeah, I think we've found it very difficult this season with injuries and stuff like that. But yeah, it's always heartbreaking to concede a last minute goal, and it was a very scrappy goal. I remember they had a free kick wide and a fullback sort of switched off, and they just sort of played it down the byline, crossed it in. It was sort of chaos in the box, and Billy Sharp does what he does best, which is sort of fox in the box, and yeah, he managed to get an equaliser for them, which sort of kickstarted their season to a degree.
Shame. Still, last game,
yeah. Wales 2, Hungary 0 on my birthday, incidentally. Just like to drop a hint there, Chris, you know. 19th of November. Superb double from Ramsey, who, let's be honest, he's had a fantastic career, and he had that really serious injury while at Arsenal, but he's bounced back to, you know, end up at Juventus, which is no mean feat. Why was this such an important one for you?
Yeah, and this is number one for me by far. I remember after this game, I've never experienced a feeling like it. There was a lot sort of going against us that European sort of qualifying campaign. I remember we had a couple of tough away games. I think our first game was against Slovakia. We won that. Then we lost to Croatia away and Hungary away. So from three games, we only got 3 points. And I think Croatia were ahead of us. They sort of was top in the group, then Hungary was second, and then we won our next couple of games, and the final game of that group was against Hungary, where if Hungary won that game, they would have qualified for the Euros, and if we won, we would have qualified. And it was at the Cardiff City Stadium in front of a packed out Wales crowd, and it was going to be a massive game, probably one of the biggest games I've ever been involved in. Obviously a lot riding on it, whole nation sort of relying on you to go out and get the all important win. And luckily I started that game, because in the build up to that game I hadn't actually played a lot for Bournemouth. I was sort of out of the team at that point. Obviously as an international manager, you normally would pick a team that's been playing regularly at club levels, you know, they've sort of got that match fitness and got that good feeling sort of going into the games, which I didn't have. But luckily the manager sort of stuck with me, which he's done ever since he got the job, really. I don't think there's been many games where I've sort of missed when he's been in charge. So yeah, I think he's got a lot of faith in me, and he showed the faith that he sort of installed to sort of drop Ashley Williams, who's obviously the captain and a hero in so many Welsh fans' eyes, sadly so, after sort of leading them over the last sort of 10 years at international level, so to sort of get the nod ahead of someone like that was, yeah, it was big for me, and it sort of showed the amount of faith that the manager did have in me. And luckily, I could sort of repay him. He had a really good performance. He was up against a striker that Bully does when we played him away. He sort of got a goal late when we played him away, and he's a real handful, sort of 6'5", big lad, good in the air, strong. So we knew it would be tough against him, but we dealt with him from sort of minute one. I remember sort of first header is always important for me in a game, just sort of get better with your opponent and sort of let them know you're in for a, he's in for a tough game. And yeah, we got a nice early goal through Ramsey, and yeah, you just sort of have that feeling during the game that it's your lucky night. Fans were really behind us. Like I said, we got a goal fairly early on, sort of settled the nerves, and we got another goal shortly after. So I think at 2-0 we were very comfortable, had a lot of the ball, and sort of limited them to very few chances. And yeah, when the final whistle went, I mean, the celebrations after the game were unbelievable. I had all my Welsh family there, and my girlfriend, mum, dad, all my family and friends watching it live on Sky. So it was a massive moment, and yeah, like 100%, it by a country mile beats any game that I've ever been involved in. Yeah, I think that it would take a lot to sort of beat a game like that, and obviously knowing that you're off to the Euros, which we thought would have been this summer. Yeah, it was disappointed sort of with what's happened recently with the coronavirus to sort of postpone that. But yeah, we'll just have that to look forward to next year, and it will sort of give us sign to work towards, and hopefully I would have had another sort of few games under, well, hopefully a lot of games under my belt in the build up to that, and a year sort of more experience and with a lot more games behind me.
Yeah, fingers crossed, mate. Well, look, you mentioned the Euros. If we look at 2016, arguably Wales' best tournament, almost arguably, probably is actually, to be fair, reaching the semi-finals. It was a pretty old squad then. We had the likes of James Chester, Collins, Joe Ledley, etc., etc. Now, do you think you guys are under more pressure to perform given how well they did in that tournament? Or do you think the Welsh public are looking at you guys saying, well, it's a relatively young squad, so we're not going to put them under as much pressure to perform?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think there's obviously always going to be that pressure after such a successful 2016 campaign. That team sort of showed the nation what we're capable of and how far we can go and how we can sort of come up against such good opponents like Belgium. Obviously that memorable game where Hal Robson-Kanu done that unbelievable turn and finish. So that's against Belgium, who at the moment are probably one of the best teams in the world. So yeah, sort of going into this campaign, there's always that and a bit of pressure. But I think it's very much a team that's in transition. Like you said, you've got a lot of players that are sort of coming towards the end of their careers. Like you said, Joe Ledley, Ashley Williams, sort of Chris Gunter, Wayne Hennessy, they're all sort of getting on. So I think, like I said, it is a team that's in transition, and you've got a lot of young lads coming through. But at the same time, I think there should be a bit of pressure because there's so many good players, young lads coming through. We've got a team, Dan James playing regularly at United, Ava Brooks obviously at Bournemouth, Harry Wilson, Bournemouth, Ethan Ampadu, Joe Roden at Swansea, Conor Roberts. You've got a lot of really good talented young lads coming through, so I think there's always going to be that pressure because you look at them sort of names and you think, oh, we've got a really good team here, we've got a team that hopefully in a few years time can sort of go on and compete, really can compete at the top level. But yeah, I think, like I said, at the moment I don't think there's too much pressure with obviously our age and quite a new team, but I think there's no reason why in the next couple of years we can't sort of come together and produce a really good sort of World Cup or Euro campaign.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Go on, sorry, Stel.
No, Karen. I said cheers. Sorry.
Oh, apologies.
Sorry, I thought you were going to say something else.
Do you know what, Chris? We're only down the road from each other, but we're doing it over Skype. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
safest way.
It is absolutely. So, in the game, I mean, you said that you were comfortable, and after the second goal, it was pretty much just, you know, running the clock down. So, in a game like that, you know, concentration is always a key attribute for a centre half. But in a game like that where Wales were actually quite dominant, is it a different type of concentration to one where in a game where you're constantly in the action, part of the action? Can you maybe you know, give us a little bit of an insight into the two different parts of a game?
I think it's massive. I mean, it's games like that. I mean, you hear sort of people speak about goalkeepers in a very comfortable team. A team like, I would say Man City with Edison, a very dominant team, but obviously he's used a lot in their sort of build-up and he's always sort of involved. But maybe a team like Liverpool that are so dominant in games that they don't play through their keeper as much as City do with Edison. So, yeah, for sort of defenders, when you do have a lot of the ball and you've got a lot of possession and you've sort of got good control in the opposition half, I think that's when it's so much more important to sort of stay switched on, make sure you're set behind the ball, make sure you've got good defensive shape, ready to sort of lock the opponents out. Because I mean, it's so easy that, that's one thing I noticed when I first sort of came to the Brentford team, that there was so much emphasis on sort of locking out the opponent when we've got the ball high up in good position, because as soon as there's a sort of turnover and it's straight into the front man, you don't want him to have time to bring it down and lay people off and bring other players into play. So it's important to sort of have one in front, one behind, so you sort of lock him out. And I think it's really important, like you said, in a game like that where there's so much ride on it, you don't want to get done with sort of one ball in behind or one sort of lapse in concentration from a set piece or a corner. So I think in that Hungary game, that's where they didn't look most threatening. They've got quite a big team, like I said, that big centre forward for them. They did have a couple of chances from corners, from free kicks. So I think it's really important to stay switched on throughout. And like you said, even more so when you've got good control and good possession. Because I think when you're sort of under the cushion a lot of the time, and when the opponent's got a lot of the ball, naturally you are switched on because you can see everything in front of you and you know that the other team's got the ball and you're sort of switched on. Whereas when your attacking players have got the ball hard the pitch, it's easy to sort of get in that mindset, right, that's what I've done now, like, we've got good control, we haven't really got to stay switched on. But I think like one long ball down the pitch and I think you can come undone, which I've actually experienced that against Leicester this season. So obviously marking Jamie Vardy, who's notorious sort of running behind and sharp movement and very quick, and it was a prime example. We had sort of good possession up the pitch, suddenly turned the ball over, falls to Chilwell, one sort of hoof up the pitch, and Jamie Vardy gets in behind me and Steve Cook, who were sort of the partnership that game, and where we were sort of fairly comfortable in the game, one long ball and a lapse in concentration, they score from it. And yeah, that's a prime example of why it's so important, especially against players like that, when they're just waiting for that moment where the ball gets turned over, straight away running behind. You see Vardy, he's done it all his career and he's done it against some top defenders, so it's really important. I think it does sort of come with age as well, more experience you are, the better you are in them sort of situations. Obviously communication is a big factor with that as well.
Excellent. Just one more question related to that game, sort of loosely related. Have you managed to get a game of golf with Gareth Bale yet?
But no, I don't actually play golf myself. I know firsthand how passionate he is about it. He's when we go and stay in the hotels, he's always sort of playing like mini golf in the hotel. even if there's not a golf course in the hotel where we're staying at, he'll get a cart, put it towards the end of the corridor, get his sort of putting club out, get a golf ball and try and sort of hit it into the glass. So he's so passionate about it. I mean, I think he's nicknamed the caddy out there or golfer. He's obviously got his own golf course in his back garden, so I don't think I'd be up to the level of his standards, to be honest.
Maybe even caddy for him.
A lot of the Bournemouth lads actually started taking it up during the lockdown. Although obviously the golf courses weren't open, as soon as they did reopen, when the weather was nice, a lot of the lads started doing it at Bournemouth. It'd be good if I can get hold of Nathan Ake trying to swing for a golf ball. It will be your entertainment for tonight, I'll tell you that. Very, very, very interesting.
Brilliant. So if you're not golfing, you just still like gardening.
Do you know what? Again, during this lockdown, me and my girlfriend sort of spent a lot more time out in the garden, a lot more than we normally do. So we sort of spent a bit of time. We've done a couple of trips to the garden centre, got a few plants for the garden, and we've got a pergola set up now. So
excellent.
Got a fire pit outside. So yeah, we've spent a lot more time out there. When I first sort of moved into my house, it was a brand new build house. It was very empty, so my focus was sort of getting all the interior done. And like I said, during this lockdown, sort of giving us an opportunity to sort of improve it outside. And yeah, it's looking quite nice actually. Take some credit for that.
Brilliant.
Well, still? Mike knows I love gardening anyway, so you know that's my escapism, so to speak. So yeah. There we go. Right, that's pretty much it, man. Chris, thanks for joining us, mate. Really appreciate it. Before we let you leave, are there any socials that you'd like to plug, or are you just one of those people where you stay away from social media as much as you can?
So I'm on social media a bit. I try not to go on too often. I think it's got so many positives and so many benefits in terms of sort of keeping up to date with football scores and seeing what your mates getting up to and other sort of footballers that I play with. It's great for that, but there's a lot of sort of negatives to it, a lot of hate that you get on it, which is what you see. But no, I do keep up to date with everyone, but I don't go on it too often. Try and stay away from it as much as I can.
Fair enough.
Girlfriend tells me
off
all the time.
Best way.
Two final questions, Chris, from me. Now, first one, I know you're a huge QPR fan. You always used to go on about it at school. And you were a regular at Loftus Road. Now, since becoming a pro, have you ever gone back to watch any games?
I've been back a couple of... It's so difficult. With the commitment and with the drive back. I do know it's my drive back, like my back's in pieces from the motorway drive, and it does sort of take it out of you. So I try not to go back too often. When I do go back to London, I go back and see my friends and family, because that's the most important thing. But yeah, I've gone back a couple of times, a couple of midweek QPR games where we've sort of had an early finish of training down here, and Bournemouth haven't got a midweek game and QPR playing, and then my dad sort of gives me a phone call and says, "Oh, do you want me to get you a ticket?" And I'd either take them up on it or not, but yeah, I've gone back a couple of times. I'd be more inclined to sort of go back and watch Brentford play, to be honest.
Nice.
Just where I've sort of had a lot more of a commitment to them in recent years. I'd always sort of want to keep in check with them, and I've sort of maintained some really good relationships with people at the club. So when I left, they sort of made it very clear that if I ever want to go back and not to join, but if I ever want to go back for a game or need any tickets, then sort of don't hesitate. So that was really sort of nice to leave on decent terms. Sometimes difficult with football to sort of leave on good terms.
That's nice, and of course they've got the new stadium to look forward to as well. And and the final question: Have you got anything that you want to say to Bournemouth fans as we get to the end of the season? Obviously, really tight at the bottom. Is there anything you want to say to the Bournemouth fans?
I think just it has been a very difficult season. I mean, we've had a lot going against us, as I'm sure a lot of teams have. But with the amount of injuries we've had this year, it's been ridiculous. I mean, I've never known a team been hit by so many injuries for whatever reason. Very unfortunate. We've had a lot of our better players out for long periods of the season. So I think just stick with us. I mean, the club's been really difficult. A lot worse positions than it is at the minute. Obviously, nearly going into administration when Eddie Howe first took over on -17 points. So the club sort of achieved a lot with a lot going against it. So I think we've got more than enough talent in the team. Just hopefully get a couple of results to get us out of it, which I know we're more than capable of. So hopefully come this time next month we're still in the Premier League.
Brilliant. Chris, from me, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it, and good to hear from you again.
Cheers, Chris, mate. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers, mate. Have a good one.
Speak to you soon, Chris.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Right. That was Chris Mepham, ladies and gents. Mike, thanks for the hookup, my friend. Twitter handle?
At Del Pieri.
Wonderful. And we're on Twitter @ Shoot the Defence. So, until next time, take care.